Does forming your skill-based groups feel a little mysterious? You have the screening data, but you're still asking, okay, how do I use this to move students forward? A good friend of the podcast, Dr. Stephanie Stoller, runs the Reading Science Academy, and she created an exclusive grouping resource bundle free for Literacy in Color listeners. You'll get Stephanie's cheat sheets for grouping students at the beginning, middle, and end of the year, plus a video that walks you through a real classroom example. I'll always proclaim that I myself am a proud Reading Science Academy member for life, and I can genuinely say that the quality of the resources and professional learning is top notch. The Facebook community is also one of the most supportive spaces I've experienced. Reading Science Academy is honestly one of the first places I go whenever I have a question about literacy instruction or assessment. So go to readingscienceacademy.com/color to get your free grouping resource bundle today. You're listening to episode 54 of Literacy in Color. Welcome to the Literacy in Color podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Sullivan, a science of reading advocate with over a decade of experience as a reading interventionist and literacy coach. I'm passionate about making evidence-based instruction both effective and engaging. If you're interested in captivating our learners on reading fluently and understanding language, or as I like to call it, keeping it colorful, then you've found the right place. Each week, we'll explore intriguing lit bits and practical strategies around the science of reading and structured literacy to help you be colorful and teach colorfully. Are you ready to bring literacy to life? Let's color outside the lines and make an impact together. Have you ever had a student who can rattle off the sounds in a word, b-at, but then they say tab? Or some other completely different word like balloon or banana or even chicken, something completely different. If you're nodding your head right now, you're not alone. I don't know how many of you grew up watching Friends. Do you remember the one where Joey learns to speak French? Phoebe's teaching him, "Je m'appelle Claude." And Joey responds, "Je te plie bleu," or "Je te floup flee." And he hears it, but he repeats something different. And what comes out is not even close. So now Joey isn't exactly attempting blending here, but our students sometimes do the same thing when they're trying to string sounds together. And here's the important thing. When a student says tab or balloon or banana for the sounds b, a, t, that's not necessarily a decoding issue. Sometimes it's a working memory issue. So today, we're diving into blending, what it is, why it matters, and most importantly, what to do when students struggle. We're going to talk about different blending strategies, scaffolds for students who struggle, and routines that make blending practice more effective. So research about the importance of blending has been around for decades. Back in 1976, Resnick and Beck shared that blending needs to be explicitly taught and modeled often. Blending essentially is a skill that readers need in order to decode or to read unfamiliar words. Now, there are different approaches to blending, and we can break them down into two main buckets: additive sound-by-sound blending and whole word blending. Let's tackle additive sound-by-sound blending first. Some people refer to this as successive blending. If we're tapping into morphology here, additive holds this notion of adding to. And successive has a Latin root, succedere, meaning to come after. So when you think of this type of blending, think about starting with one grapheme and adding another grapheme after that, blending those, and adding another grapheme after that. So picture it as blending the word step by step. Since we're in podcast form, I want you to envision the letter S. The teacher would write the letter S on the board, and we'll say the sound, S. Now the teacher can add the letter A after the S. We'll say the sound of the new letter, ah. And now we're going to slide our finger under both letters, S-A, and say those sounds together, sa. Next, the teacher would add the letter T at the end. So we'd say the sound of the new letter, T, and go back to the beginning, slide your finger under each sound and go, sat. And we would connect it to meaning, of course. The cat sat on the rug, the baby sat on my lap, sat. This approach is a fantastic starting point for blending because it's so scaffolded. Students don't have to hold on to three sounds in working memory at once. Instead, we give them a checkpoint. First, one sound. Next, two sounds together. And finally, we add a third. But here's an important thing. Eventually, we want to phase out additive blending. In letters, they're really clear. Additive sound-by-sound blending is not sufficient to establish fluent word recognition. And that makes sense, right? It's slower, it's more stifled, and we want to think of this as like training wheels. We use it to establish the skill, but the goal is eventually to move into whole word blending, which is smoother and more efficient. So what is whole word blending? This is where things start to speed up a bit. Instead of building a word piece by piece, we see the whole word on display from the beginning. We'd touch each grapheme and produce the sound of each grapheme, and then blend them smoothly into one word. So using our same example, the teacher might write the letters S-A-T on the board, and the student would slide their finger under each letter, saying S-A-T, and then immediately say the whole thing together, sat. It's quicker, it's smoother, and it's the direction we ultimately want kids to head. Now, whole word blending can actually be done two different ways. Sound by sound, so s-a-t, sat. Or we can do this using continuous blending or connected phonation, sat. So this is where connected phonation comes into play. Again, some people will call this continuous blending. Research by Gonzalez Frey and Airy in 2021 shows us that stretching or connecting the sounds together is more effective than keeping them segmented, tapping each sound in isolation. So instead of that choppy s, a, t, with pauses, students glide, sat, sat. But what if students still struggle? What other teaching moves can we have up our sleeve? One helpful scaffold is to reduce the number of phonemes. So if you are working with CVC words that have three sounds and students are unsuccessful, drop it down to two sounds. Work with VC words like at, in, on, it, and up. And here's the key. We want to remove the initial consonant, not the final one. And why? Because removing the final consonant would change the syllable type to open, where it shifts the vowel sound from short to long. So we want to preserve that short vowel sound and keep that consistent closed syllable structure as a precursor to our CVC work. So this is a great starting point when blending three sounds feels like too much for a student's working memory. Another scaffold is to be really intentional with continuous blending and starting with sounds that actually are continuous and really can stretch. So think about phonemes like mmm, fff, or fff. I can keep going and going and going and going, just like the Energizer Bunny, right? Until I run out of airflow. These are sounds that we can hold and glide right into the vowel without pausing. In a word like map, we could really overemphasize that gliding into the vowel, mat. And on the flip side, we can avoid starting with stop sounds like p or t when you're first introducing blending, because these don't really glide as naturally as they're just a puff of air. So if a child is already struggling, these more abrupt sounds can make the process a bit more challenging. Now, it's not to say that continuous blending can't be used with a stop sound. Think of a word like top. If we were to try continuous blending here, it would sound more like top. We need to link the stop sound with the vowel in order for it to work and not sound so choppy, instead of just the segmented t-a-p. But that seamless slide of starting with a continuous sound can be a really powerful teaching move when students are showing signs of difficulty. So when you're choosing words for practice, lean into continuous sounds at the beginning because it sets students up for success and makes blending smoother from the start. Another scaffold is to back up to phonemic awareness. Sometimes the best teaching move is to strip it right back to the basics. If a student can't blend in print, take the letters away and work orally at the sound level. Ask yourself, can this student even blend sounds by ear? We know that phonemic awareness is strengthened when we're learning an alphabetic writing system. So phonics and phonemic awareness have this reciprocal relationship. But for students who have a phonological core deficit, they have difficulty with phonological processing, the letters themselves can actually become a barrier. They can make the work a little more confusing instead of supportive. And I want to be clear here. I'm talking about students for whom blending is a huge challenge, not your typically developing readers who will usually pick up on this through phonics instruction. So without any letters on display, you might say the sound slowly, almost like a robot. Listen to the sounds in my word and blend them together. R-at. What's my word? Students might reply, rat. This takes away the extra cognitive load of processing graphemes so students can focus on just the skill of blending itself. And once that's solid, we could bring the print back in. And one powerful tool here is to use Elkonin boxes or sound boxes with chips or tokens. So these give students a concrete multisensory way to hear, say, and track each phoneme. They move a chip or a token into each box as they say the sound, and then they can slide their finger under the boxes to blend it all together. This kind of practice builds the oral foundation kids need. So when they return to blending with print, they're more likely to succeed. Another blending scaffold is called backwards decoding. Instead of starting at the beginning of a word and moving forward, you flip the process. Students read the rhyme first, R-I-M-E, and then add the onset. Now, a rhyme is everything that comes after the vowel. So in a word like cat, at would be the rhyme. In a word like black, ack would be the rhyme. This gives students the opportunity to start with that continuous vowel sound and hold on to that common rhyme chunk. So we may start blending at, at, and then add k to the beginning, cat, and then again blend at, at, add h to the beginning, hat. Now here's the thing. This is different from just teaching word families. With backwards decoding, the emphasis stays on the blending process itself. We're still taking in each letter string to decode each sound in a word, not just trying to memorize the unit. But with enough deliberate practice, these parts can become unitized in the reading brain, and it assists in the orthographic mapping process, which is pretty cool. And the final scaffold I'm sharing with you today might be a given. I hope it's a given, but it's truly tapping into the gradual release of responsibility model. When all else fails, model, model, model. So some sample teacher talk might sound like, watch me blend these sounds. Met, met. Now let's try it together. Met, met. Now you try. And now students can try this work themselves. And it's that simple. I do, we do, you do. And as always, it might sound more like I do, we do, we do, we do, you do, we do, we do again. I do some more, we do again. But the key here is to use corrective feedback immediately. And don't be afraid to keep the scaffold in place until the student is ready to go solo. Sometimes they just need more modeling and more guided practice before the independence clicks. Now, within this release, You might be flexing between the different blending types depending on the word and depending on the student. Maybe you're going to use additive successive blending. Met. Maybe you use continuous blending within the whole word blending approach. Met. So this gradual release ensures that students get the explicit modeling they need, but always with the goal of moving them towards independence, accuracy, and automaticity. Now, I'd also like to note an important transition, moving from oral blending to whisper blending, and eventually to silent blending. Blending out loud is so important. We want students to hear the pronunciation of sounds and link them with the letters on the page. That's what's building the reading brain. But there comes a time, especially as students begin reading connected text, when we don't want them sounding out every single word out loud. The goal is efficiency and eventually fluency. So we coach them through that shift. First blending aloud, then whispering to themselves, and eventually blending silently in their heads. And that's when blending has become internalized and more automatic. And of course, there's going to come a time where students are moving from phonetic decoding into orthographic mapping and just instantly lifting words off the page because it's part of their sight word bank. And the thing is, it's not a one-size-fits-all timeline. This is where teacher judgment really comes in. You know when a student is ready to move from this overt blending to more internal blending, and you'll guide the progression at the right pace for each learner. So here's the big takeaway. When kids make blending errors, it's not just about drilling harder, but it's about scaffolding smarter. So the next time you hear a Joey moment in your classroom where b-at becomes banana, you'll know it's not just a nonsensical error. It may be working memory. And I hope now you have some strategies up your sleeve to help bridge that gap. Thank you so much for tuning into Literacy in Color. I hope today's episode left you feeling both inspired and equipped with something new to add to your teaching toolkit. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would truly mean so much to me if you'd leave a 5-star review. It helps other educators find the show and join our colorful community. And don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode. For more tips, tools, and resources, be sure to check out the links in the show notes at michelleandthecolorfulclassroom.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week. Until then, be colorful and teach colorfully. Do you ever catch yourself saying, English is just crazy? Maybe your students come across a tricky word and you tell them, you just have to memorize that one, or this is the part you have to know by heart. But deep down, you know it's still confusing. Here's the truth. English isn't random. It's a wonderfully complex system, and once you understand how that system works, through sound, structure, and meaning, everything changes. That's what Sarah, Paul, and I teach inside Mastering Morphology. This isn't another curriculum. It's deep teacher knowledge inside a practical comprehensive course that finally shows you how words really work. No more exceptions, no more gimmicks or patching holes with memorization or phonics alone. It's time to go beyond sound it out and give your students the framework they need to truly understand words. So if you're ready to stop guessing and start teaching with confidence, join us inside Mastering Morphology. Enrollment is open now, so we invite you to click the link in the show notes to get started.